I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to The Connection. Kathy Hanauer co-founded the popular New York Times Modern Love column with her husband Daniel Jones back in 2004. Every week, readers learn about the complexities, the highs and lows, the hurts and triumphs of everyday relationships from personal essays edited by Jones. Hanauer's own guest essay, titled The Case for Ending a Long, Mostly Good Marriage, struck a nerve. In it, she revealed that she and her husband had separated after 33 years of marriage. Perhaps what was most shocking, it's an amicable split. They both agreed that it was time to move on, although she writes it was initially tough for their kids, their parents, and friends to understand. The response from readers has been almost universally critical, even brutal. I should add that while they are living separate lives, they are not technically divorced for tax and health insurance reasons. Now, about 40% of marriages in the U.S. will end in divorce, many of these relationships leaving behind a wake of hurt, anger, and unresolved problems. So on The Connection today, how to end a long-term relationship without causing so much pain and damage, with psychotherapist and advice columnist Lori Gottlieb. But first, we begin with Kathy Hanauer. She's a novelist, she's an essayist, editor, and critic. And Kathy, nice to have you with us today on The Connection.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I mentioned the fact that the response from your readers was pretty brutal in terms of criticizing you for what you wrote. Did that surprise you? Did that hurt you?
It definitely did not hurt me, and it did not surprise me. I've written a little bit about marriage and other topics, similar topics before, and I know that it's a sacred topic in this country, marriage, and people are very committed to what they're choosing. And, you know, I do think it's interesting that most of the overwhelming criticism was from men. 70% of divorce in this country is initiated by women, and men don't like it. They like to be married. They're happier in marriage. So I was anticipating, and I was not surprised.
Why did you want to go public with your separation?
Good question. I don't know. I think I've always written about myself, my life. I've always written about relationships. I have 5 books about love and marriage and sex and relationships. And it interests me. But I also think, you know, there's such a stigma around divorce in this country, and it's not always a terrible thing. You know, we had a good, we're not technically divorced, but we've been separate for over 4 years. We had a good separation, and I wanted to almost defend that and say that, like, you know, I think when I got married, I know when I got married, I felt uncomfortable committing to this for life because of the person I was and still am. And I think we had a long, great run, and I felt proud of that. But I also feel proud of the decision I made, that we made together to end it.
Well, you write in this essay that you were reluctant to say until death do us part. And I found an essay you wrote in 2001 where you admitted the same thing, that you were really reluctant to promise to do something you were not sure that you could carry through on. But till death do us part is so much part of the vows that people take when they get married.
Right. And I have a problem with that, honestly. You know, when you said yourself, 40% of marriage in this country, and I've seen the statistic, 43 also end in divorce. And as we all know, many of the marriages that don't end in divorce are not particularly happy. They're people don't have enough money, or they're afraid to be alone. So I think that marriage is great when it works. And I think it's great for raising children, and it's great for combining finances in those hard early years. But I also think there's a lot to be said for being single, especially later in life, especially for women. I'll start with that.
Oh, well, fair enough. Let me pick up on something, because you described those early years of your marriage as, you know, as relatively happy. You got along, you had a couple of kids. It felt like you had a pretty good family life. So was this a sort of gradual disintegration, if I can use that word, of your relationship, or were there sort of aha moments where you felt like, you know, this isn't really working?
We had a great family life. We had a great married life for a long, long time. I was incredibly privileged. I married a good guy, We were compatible. We loved each other. We had healthy children. We worked together. We had the similar goals. It really worked for a long, long time. It wasn't until, and if you had asked me 5 or 10 years ago if we would ever get divorced, I would have said probably not. I mean, I don't see why. But I always knew that I wasn't afraid to leave a marriage if it wasn't what I thought it should be. I'm not afraid to be alone. I like the freedom of solitude, and I'm a writer. So I think when it did start to turn, and it never got terrible. We were lucky. There was no cheating. There was no plate slinging or anything like that. It just drifted apart. And I think we both felt that we were beating a dead horse. We went to some therapy. The therapist was actually the first person that introduced it. We both resisted. But over time, you know, COVID, I think, did a huge number on a lot of marriages, including ours. And by the end, you know, we just said, let's separate and see what happens. And what happened was we both felt, I think, more, I don't want to say happier because that's such a tricky word, but more fulfilled or rejuvenated or something than we had for a long time.
Would your husband say this the same story? Would he tell the same narrative, do you think?
It's hard for me to know exactly how he would tell it. I'm more of the, you know, like most women in couples, I'm more of the one that talks about us. I think men are more reserved about talking about their wives. I'm sure he would have his own version, but I think he would agree that it was a mutual decision. And I was probably less anxious about the idea of going back out on my own. I don't think he loved that, but I think that he agreed that that's what we should do. And he's doing fine. He's doing great. I just talked to him this morning. We share a dog. We live a block apart in New York. So we're fine.
You write something really interesting that, and I'm quoting you here, we faced the truth before it wrecked us. And I thought that was a really insightful thing that you realized, that maybe before you tried to keep this thing together, but it wasn't working and it was going to turn maybe ugly, that you anticipated that and decided to move on.
I think so. I think we're really lucky in that way. I mean, I've seen, you know, when you're single, you meet a lot of people that had bad divorces. I just feel lucky. We tried hard. We worked hard in the same way that you work hard in a marriage. It's funny. There's this new show on Netflix people have probably seen called Vladimir. And one of the lines, it's from a great book by the same name. And one of the lines in it that one of the characters said is, marriage is hard. Divorce is hard. Choose your hard. I think, what was the beginning of the question? I think there, we just made a commitment that we would do it as well as we could, that we would be civilized to each other. And we've been able to pull that off so far. I never say never, but it's been 4 years. The money stuff is tricky. You have to figure it out. And you don't always agree, but just, you don't always agree in marriage
sure,
either. You try to work on it like a grown-up and compromise and all those things.
How about your children? And I'm sure, I mean, initially, all children, I think, largely want their parents to be together and want everyone to be happy. That doesn't always work out. But how are your children faring with all of this?
They're fine. I mean, my children were 27 and 24 when we split. Now they're 31 and almost 28. So, you know, they were not children, little kids. It's funny, some of the people in the Free Press did a story about the Times piece and how it went viral. And they were, some of the comments were like, well, what about your children? It's like, well, my children are grownups. They're living their lives. They see that we still support each other. We still love each other. We still are a family in many ways. They're, you know, it taught them some things. Marriage isn't always forever, even though we make vows that it will be. And that goes back to what you were originally asking about vows. I have a problem promising something that half of the people can't do. And I didn't know that I would be one that could. And people have said to me, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you go in saying you don't want to promise that, then that's, you're going to make that happen, that you don't promise it. But I didn't want to. I think there are different advantages and disadvantages to being married and being single. And I didn't know that I wanted all of one for my whole life. I would have stayed if everything had been great. It's not like I needed to get divorced, but.
You wrote, we hugged, apologized for our shortcomings, and we freed each other. I mean, that makes it sound very clear and clean and simple. I'm sure it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't. again, I think we're luckier than most. You know, we both had jobs, we had similar amounts of savings, similar IRAs, we did similar work, we understood who each other were. And that was, you know, a lot of the hard fought parts of our marriage, but also what made it compatible. So it's not like I was a person who had never worked and had raised the kids and that he had to give me all this alimony or anything. We just sort of tried to be as even as possible. That said, I mean, he, you know, the Modern Love column, we started together, but he's the one that I only did it for a very short time. And he's the one that built it into this huge thing that it is now. And he makes a lot more money than I do now. I'm still a writer. So there was some, you know, finagling with that and what he owed me for, you know, I made
stuff.
More money in the later years of our marriage. He made much more in the later years, like how it all has to be worked out. And sometimes with the help of a mediator, we didn't want to use lawyers because we didn't want to spend all our money, all our savings on lawyers. And to get to probably the same place that we did on our own, but we sent emails back and forth. We, as we did in our marriage, and we sometimes have an argument in writing because we're both writers and it helps you think it out instead of just getting crazy in person and emotional.
So has singlehood lived up to your expectations?
I'm very happy. I don't know, you know, you can ask me again in 5 or 10 years.
Right.
Sure. And, you know, the dating apps have been very fun for me. I've met all kinds of people that I would not have met and people very different from me. And I think that by the end of my marriage, I felt stagnant. I don't think Dan felt that way. He was, you know, he has this big job and he's running around meeting all kinds of people. I was home in our house in Massachusetts where we'd raised the kids and the kids were gone. And though I was still writing, I needed to get back to the life I had had. I came back to New York. I have friends around me, colleagues. And, you know, I've had a good time. I mean, I won't say it's perfect. There's definitely lonely times. You know, that's one of the downsides of being single is you have weekends or months in the summer where you have nobody to travel with. I said in the piece, I've gone to Paris alone. I've gone to Maine alone. But I'm okay with that. I'm not a person who needs somebody with me all the time, but definitely has its lonely parts. But I love the people I've met and the way my life has expanded.
And we're almost up on a break here. And when we have to say goodbye to you, though, Kathy, and I'm just wondering, any regrets at all?
Absolutely not. I have to admit, I mean, I sometimes get, I don't like anyone to be sad. I don't want Dan to be sad. I don't want my kids to be sad. But Dan doesn't seem sad to me. He has a great girlfriend. I've met her. She's lovely. My kids are doing fine. They both have partners. I think they'll probably both get married and have children. I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky. And I do realize that. It's not the same for everyone.
Well, Kathy Hanauer, thank you for joining us today on The Connection, and good luck to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. And the essay she wrote, The Case for Ending a Long, Mostly Good Marriage, in the New York Times Modern Love column. Much more after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen and was just talking with writer Kathy Hanauer about an essay she wrote for the New York Times Modern Love column about separating from her husband of 33 years. They parted ways on amicable terms and have figured out how to stay connected while living apart and moving on with their lives. We asked psychotherapist Lori Gottlieb to talk more about how to end long-term relationships without causing so much damage, hurt and angry feelings, unresolved conflicts. She writes an advice column for the New York Times, Ask the Therapist. She's also co-host of two podcasts, Since You Asked and Dear Therapist. She's also the author of Maybe You Should Talk to Someone and Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good. And Lori Gottlieb, nice to have you with us today on The Connection.
Thanks so much for having me.
How unusual is it to see a couple in a mostly good marriage end that marriage?
I don't think it's very common. I think usually when people decide to split, it's because things have gotten to a point where the cost of being together is more than the cost of being apart. And I mean all the costs, the financial costs, the emotional costs, all of it.
Can we say that people divorce or separate the way they marry, the sort of focus that they have coming in, the kind of people that they are, the way they deal with difficulties is pretty much the same going into a marriage and getting out of it?
Well, there's a saying we marry our unfinished business. So sometimes we choose a partner because we have something that we want to resolve or we think our partner is going to heal for us. And while being in a really solid, strong relationship can be very healing, you're still going to bring your old patterns, ways of being, ways you argue, ways you feel hurt, ways you feel triggered, way you trigger someone else. All of that will come into the marriage. The question is, what do you do with that? And how self-aware can you be? So I think people come in thinking sometimes, that marriage is the solution to something, as opposed to marriage is here because I want a partnership.
I want to talk about all of that, but let me get your response to all the criticism that Kathy received, letters to the or commentary to the New York Times and to other places where this article was posted. And it was pretty brutal, I have to say, to read what people were saying about her decision, largely obviously focused on her as the author of the essay. But what did you make of all that?
I think that sometimes commenters are reading something through the lens of their own experience. And so, for people who feel like they would never do that, or they feel like she didn't really consider it, or she and her husband, made a frivolous decision, they're projecting something about their own beliefs or values onto a situation that they haven't lived and haven't been in. And let's also remember that they might make a different decision. I think many people reading her column would make a different decision. So I think that instead of honoring the fact that this worked for this particular couple, people got very angry saying, well, that would not work for me or the people that I know. And therefore, how dare you do this? Which, I think kind of missed the point of her column.
Indeed. This was a sort of empty nest period in the family. Is that a time when couples begin to maybe reevaluate their relationship or maybe even decide, you know, we made it this far, let's move on and live our own separate lives?
I think families over time go through different stages and they recalibrate because of, what's going on. When you have young kids, it's very different from when you have teenagers and when you have college kids and when you have adult children. So I think families evolve. But I also think that divorce is hard on kids no matter what age. And I think that sometimes we overlook that we think, well, they're adults, they're out of the house, so they don't have to shuffle between houses, they don't have to deal with custody, they don't have to kind of live the divorce. But indeed, they do, in the sense that holidays are different, the sense of family cohesion feels different, what feels like coming back home feels different. So I think that we need to be aware that even when your kids are adults and launched into the world, that you do want to talk to them about how the divorce is affecting them.
You know, I was thinking that two of the most consequential decisions we make as adults is whether or not to get married, whether to get married, and whether or not to have children, whether to have children. And these are probably the two of the most, risky things you can do with one's life. And yet, most of us do some version of that. It is like throwing caution to the wind.
I think if you go in with intentionality, obviously you can't plan for everything. You can't know what it's like to be married until you're married. You can't know what it's like to raise children until you do it. But I think that people, many people really want that experience and they're willing to make the hard sacrifices that they entail. It sounds like in Kathy's essay and what she was talking about earlier with you, she had some ambivalence
Right.
about marriage. And so, that's maybe a little bit different from, I would say, most people who go into marriage. Most people go into marriage really excited about it.
I'm willing to say till death do us part.
Right. And hope, and that's their hope and wish that, that's their assumption. Most people do not get married thinking, well, it might not work out.
Right. even though it might not work out. But there is, it seems to me, this tension between attachment or connection and this desire for autonomy. I mean, I think we all have some version of that. And in a marriage, it's finding the right balance that makes sense for perhaps each part of the couple, but also the couple together.
Right. And as Kathy was saying, in their marriage, and this happens so often, at first it might be that they're making equal amounts of money or having the same kind of career success. And then somebody's career takes off or somebody's career declines. And it creates all kinds of internal power balances and power imbalances and different kinds of feelings of envy, of shame, of all kinds of things that we feel like are taboo to talk about in the context of marriage, to say, I'm so envious of my partner, or I resent them for being so successful, or I feel sidelined. Those are hard things to talk about. And it happens very often in marriages, and it often leads to divorce when people don't talk about it openly and try to work through it together.
Why don't they do that? I mean, is it just they don't have the words, or it's too scary, or they don't know what they think and feel?
I think that we feel like we need, because we want to love our partners unconditionally, whatever that means to people, that if we do feel resentment or envy or anger about their success, so it's not about what they're doing in the context of how they treat me, it's how they are in the world, and I am feeling these feelings that I don't want to feel, right? A lot of us are ashamed of feeling that way, but especially when it's about our partner, this person that we are supposed to love and support.
I'm assuming you're a psychotherapist, so you deal with couples and people in these intense relationships. I'm assuming every couple looks at the relationship differently. So if you interview, one member, you're going to get one narrative. Another member, you're going to get another narrative. And yet there they are, living in the same apartment or same house, living these parallel lives. Help us understand how that works.
So I like to say that we're all unreliable narrators, which means that we are telling a version of the truth, which is the world through the world, the way that we see the world. So we all view the world through our particular lens. And sometimes we forget that there's somebody else can have the same exact interaction or have be in the same exact experience and have a very different understanding of it or a very different perspective on it. And so in couples, it's really interesting to watch when you say, if your partner were describing this interaction or this experience, what do you think that they would say? And it opens up this whole world of, oh, I didn't know they thought that or felt that or saw it this way. And now we have something to work with. But I think so many of us go into it with these assumptions of the way that I'm seeing it is the accurate version. And there's more to the story.
Do you think we think individually that we're a better catch than we actually are? You know what I mean? Like,
I do.
They're so lucky to have me in their lives, but maybe not so true, right?
Yes, you will put up with all of my annoying habits because of the pleasure of my company. Yes.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. And that's Lori Gottlieb. She writes the advice column for the New York Times, Ask the Therapist. She has two podcasts, one, Since You Asked, and the other, Dear Therapist. And we are talking to her about long-term relationships, long-term marriages, where they can fall apart. And we're eventually going to talk about how to separate or even divorce in ways that don't cause so much damage. Let me ask you about our families of origin. I mean, the families that we grew up in, and I'm assuming that's where we learn how adults treat each other, how a parent would treat the other parent, how they treat us. How powerful, in terms of understanding either marriage or long-term relationships, how powerful are those families of origin?
They can be very powerful, but they're not destiny. So you can see a kind of marriage that is the kind of marriage that you aspire to. And often people who got that kind of modeling growing up have an easier time of it, just inherently. But people who saw something that maybe they don't want learned from that too. They might say, I don't want that. I need to understand how I react to things so I don't bring that into the marriage without my awareness. And, we do a lot of things outside of our awareness. So the first thing is not just I'm looking for somebody who's different from my parents, but how can I be different from my parents? And then, what are the kinds of things that are really valuable to me in a relationship? What does emotional generosity look like? What does kindness look like? What does compromise look like? What does it really mean to listen to someone? What do we do when we have competing needs? And how do we negotiate that? How do we deal with discomfort? How do we deal with talking about hard things and being honest with each other, but in a kind way? Not everybody gets that kind of modeling. So that's the kind of thing that I think people, I see all kinds of couples in therapy who come before they get married, not because they're having problems, but because they want to learn these skills so that when inevitably things come up in their marriage, they know how to talk about things with each other.
Do you think we should all do that? Have some kind of counseling or therapy before we hook up with someone that we think is going to be with us for the rest of our lives?
I think a lot of people go into marriage thinking, well, we're so in love and we have all these things in common and we're so compatible. So, of course, whenever things come up, we'll be able to work through them. But they don't necessarily have the skills or the awareness of themselves or the other person. So, I think it's so valuable for people to come before they get married, for, come for three sessions and talk about some of the hard things and learn some skills. It will set the course with intentionality in a way that a lot of people don't go into marriage with.
And I'm assuming one of the sticking points is obviously disagreements and arguments, though those are difficult to deal with, but just how to handle difference, that someone is going to see something or be involved in something that you're involved in and have such a different kind of reaction to it.
Right? We call that otherness, that it's very hard for all of us as humans to remember the otherness of a different person. So often somebody will say something like, I don't understand how he or she can see it that way, right? And it's like, because they're not you, that's how they can see it that way. So we need to make room for the otherness of a different person, that there are ways in which you're very much, you feel like you see the world through a similar lens. And there are ways that you have different histories, upbringings, experiences, ways of looking at the world that are always going to be different. So how do you move through those differences?
Do you think couples have sort of the same fight through their relationship and unresolved conflicts? I mean, it might be about the children, it might be about money, it might be about sex, it might be about a lot of different things, but when you boil it all down, it's essentially the same fight.
Yes, and that's sometimes what we call kitchen sink fighting. So you're talking about one thing and then you say, and remember that time that this happened and you also did this and you also did that. Well, all those things might seem very different, but they're actually about the same core argument. You don't see me. You don't validate my feelings. You don't care about my needs. That's really the underlying argument, even if it's about the dishes or the laundry or the socks on the floor or the in-laws or whatever it might be.
Are there certain things that happen that say to you as a psychotherapist, this couple's in trouble? I mean, that there's something that they cannot seem to resolve, even in the safety of my office with them.
I think in two ways I can see that. One is if they are critical of each other, unkind to each other, demeaning of each other, that has to stop right away. So we need to kind of learn a new way of talking with each other and seeing each other and respecting each other. So first there's that. If they can't get past that, if they're just going to keep hurting each other, nothing is going to get better in their marriage. And the other thing is sometimes there are just some real differences. Like I got a letter to the column where someone said, I was in the Bay Area and we moved to the South for my wife's parents, and I hate it here and I want to move back and she won't move back. And sometimes people really just want to live in different places because they are profoundly unhappy in a certain environment. So it's not this love conquers all, and no matter what, as long as I'm with my partner, I'm happy. Sometimes there's something so upsetting to a person in their environment or lifestyle that they can't get past that. They have to find some kind of solution. Sometimes there are these things like someone wants kids and someone doesn't want kids.
Right.
Well,
How do you
you have
resolve that?
them or you don't. So, how do you kind of work through that together? And sometimes people can't.
I think you referenced this, but I remember interviewing the Gutmans, who I believe that you sort of have studied under their their approach to marriage. And obviously we're talking about marriage and divorce, but they talked about contempt, that when they see contempt, which is really disgust, it's mocking, it's name calling, that that is a very big red flag, that there's trouble.
Right. The Gottmans call those the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and one of the four is contempt. And contempt is has a high correlation with marriages that don't work out.
And you can see, I mean, contempt is physical. It's an eye roll. It's a look of disgust on someone's face.
Yeah, it's a dismissal. It's a it's name calling. It's demeaning. It's putting the other person down. Yes, the eye rolling, the body language. It's a lack of respect, but it's more than that. It's a dismissal.
I mean, is there any way back from that, even as a therapist, to sort of, once you see that, is that a sign that this is not going to work, or can people work their way back from that?
It's a sign that you're sort of in the emergency room. It's not that you're going to die. It's we need to get help with this, right? And so if we can help you with this, then, you know, we can see what's possible here. And often something really great is possible. This is what they grew up with. This is the soil in which they grew. And they don't know any different. To them, it's like, well, if my partner displeases me, I'm going to insult them. Right. You know, that's just sort of what they know. And so we have to teach them something different. And many people are very amenable to that because they're coming to therapy because they're profoundly unhappy with the way that they're interacting with each other and the lack of connection between them.
Well, let's take another short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Lori Gottlieb. She writes the Ask the Therapist column for the New York Times. And we have been talking about relationships, long-term relationships, couples, even marriage. And we'll be talking about if it's possible to have a so-called good divorce. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. While all couples have high hopes for a long and happy life together, many will separate and divorce. And there are so many reasons why couples call it quits, whether it's incompatibility or infidelity, abuse, unresolved conflicts, estrangement, communication breakdown. And today on the show, we are talking about how couples get in trouble, but also how to separate without causing so much damage. And Lori Gottlieb is our guest. She is a psychotherapist and an advice columnist. I mentioned this to Kathy Hanauer, our first guest, and she wrote in her piece in the New York Times, "We faced the truth before it wrecked us." This is talking about her husband and their decision to end their marriage. And I thought that was just very insightful. I put it to her, but let me put it to you as well.
Yeah, I think that was really brave of them to face whatever truths they needed to face. Sometimes when people face those truths, that's a moment when they find that they want to work on the marriage, that they want to stay together. So it doesn't mean because you face the truth that you're going to get divorced. And I want to bring that point up because I feel like a lot of people won't face the truth because they think that if I do, it will end our marriage, and they don't want to end the marriage. So, you know, I think that the idea of facing the truth is something that people need to do, but I don't want them to be scared to do it, to think, if I do this, you know, this thing is going to happen that I don't want to happen. Often what happens is you face the truth, and now's a moment when we can turn things into a different situation.
Kathy also said she doesn't think of this as a failure, that she and her husband failed, but that the relationship ended. And I'm assuming some relationships maybe like a friendship, run their course, and then it's time to move on. I don't know how usual or unusual that is, but what do you make of that?
Yeah, sometimes that happens. I think that it's really hard no matter what. And so I think sometimes we have these fantasies, not just about marriage, but also about escaping marriage. And the reality of escaping marriage can be really hard. You know, Kathy talked about the loneliness.
Right.
It's very different to live your life when you don't have the dailiness of this person that you have all this shared history with, all these shared experiences with. You know, there's so much kind of glue, shared friends, shared family, shared children, all of that. It can be very hard. So I think sometimes when people are having difficulty in a marriage, they fantasize about getting out of the marriage, thinking, well, that would be so great if I didn't have all this conflict. So, you know, I think that some people don't realize what divorce really entails. Other people do, and they're very aware of it, and they're much happier having made the decision to divorce. But it's not something that people, you know, should take lightly.
No, I hear you. I do think it's a cautionary tale. That said, good divorce, I'm sort of uncomfortable with that because it feels like it makes it too easy, as I think you were just referencing. But what do people have to do in order to maybe get some kind of closure on the relationship?
They have to really self-reflect on their own role in what's not working. So it's really easy to say when people come to therapy, you know, I want something to change. Well, what do you want to change? Oh, I want the other person to change, you know, and that's just human nature, of course. But let's say the other person doesn't change, because you can't change another person, but you can influence another person to change by doing something different. So I always say to couples before they come in, if you could be the best possible partner in this marriage, what would you need to do differently, regardless of what they do? Just focus on you, your goal in the therapy, I say to each person. And now they're coming in and they're each trying to be the best possible partner that they can be. And so that changes how their partner reacts to them. It's like a dance, and they're doing different dance steps. And because they're doing different dance steps, the other person's doing different dance steps, because we're all reacting to each other. So I think that that's an important thing to consider is, you know, and so if, let's say, to go to your question, if you've done everything you can to be the best possible partner, and still you're deeply unhappy, or however, you know, you can rate how unhappy you are. It doesn't,
sure.
You know, it's very personal. It's about your tolerance for what you think is important to the life that you want to live. And you're still feeling that way, then that might be, you know, a good decision for you. People in therapy will often say to me, you know, do you think we should stay together? Do you think we should get divorced? I don't know what they should do, because I'm not them, and I don't have to live their life. I know what I would do in that situation, but I don't know what they should do. So what I do is I try to help them to figure out what is possible here. And when you see what maybe the best possible version of this marriage is that good for you, or is that not?
I would think if in a success, let's call it a successful divorce, you resolve some of these conflicts. I'm making it sound, again, very easy. You have some kind of emotional closure. You feel a sense of justice. You have a sort of relatively okay post-divorce life. Then maybe you would look back at that person and think, well, if I can do this by myself, why can't I do it with you? That, you know, all the reasons sort of to separate are also the reasons to bring you back together.
Meaning
if you can have a sort of relatively good divorce, then why not stay together?
Because I think that it's different when you're saying we're both going off in this direction that we want to go in, and so we're going to work things out because we have the same goal, versus being in a marriage where you really have differences that are not working for both of you. So you can be really kind and respectful and compromise when you're both going where you want to go. If you both feel like we are just not happy going through our days together, it's really hard sometimes to be generous and compromise.
Indeed, it is. I wonder, though, whether whether you have to think about the children. We've talked about this earlier, but I think when couples are splitting apart, there's a tendency to pick sides, and even for family and for friends to pick sides, to see one person as the aggressor and one as the victim. I don't know how common that is, but I certainly have observed that.
I get so many letters to the New York Times column about somebody who their friends won't talk to them. They took the other person's side after a divorce. A divorced dad wrote in and said that nobody will let anybody sleep over at his house because they only trust the mom, even though they had an amicable divorce. So, it's a whole system. I think when people think of divorce, they think, well, it's just about these two people who are separating in life. But no, it's a whole web of people. It's friends, it's family, it's children, it's parents, it's siblings. I got a letter to the column where somebody was very good friends with the sister-in-law, and now the somebody didn't want the sister-in-law to come to the wedding, and because of a divorce. So there are so many ripple effects of a divorce that it should not be the reasons that you don't divorce, but I think people need to really consider what it means to get divorced.
It's hard to stay neutral when you see, when you see friends or family falling apart.
But I think that you should. I think that you should. Let me put it this way. I think that when people get divorced, it's easy to hear one person's side of a story and think that that's the whole story. And there's so many things that happen in a marriage, even if, let's say, someone cheated. So that's an example where someone says, well, that person's the bad one, and you're the victim, and you're the good one. But, there are so many different kinds of betrayals that happen in a marriage that, not that cheating is okay, I'm not condoning cheating, but there are so many kinds of really, really painful, hurtful, awful things that might happen. And so you just don't know. You weren't in that marriage. So instead of imagining that you know that you have all this information and you can decide, well, this is the person I want to stay in touch with, or this is the person I want to support, if you care about those people, just support them. Just be kind to both of them. Don't ostracize somebody. You don't know the whole story.
I mentioned the fact that something like 40% of marriages will end in divorce, but I noticed on second and third marriages, it's even higher. I mean, what does that tell us? That even after going through the pain of a divorce, you remarry and then do it all over again?
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but that statistic is true. But my guess is that it's because many people who get divorced think that their partner was the problem. And then they go into the next marriage not having learned what they needed to learn.
And I assume that's common, that if there are problems, it's the other guy's fault.
Often. They might say, well, I could have done this a little bit better. But really, the reason that we couldn't end up, working through it was because of whatever. And, there are lots of people who do take responsibility for their own part in it. And usually there's, people don't like to hear this, but there's a system going on. So someone will say, well, this person was very withholding. Well, what was your role in this dance? You guys are in a relationship. It's a system. So I'm not trying to blame anybody, but I'm saying that these dynamics don't generally, sometimes they do, but often there are two people participating unwittingly in a dynamic that ends up creating a lot of pain.
What does it say to you when there are couples who divorce, but they continue to fight about issues that were very much a part of their marriage, probably children, maybe money, all the things that roiled them up in the relationship, they're still angry about now that they're divorced?
Yeah, that's really unfortunate, and it does happen a lot. I think that Kathy was talking about how they went through a mediator, and they try to talk about things. At a certain point, if you got out of the marriage because you didn't want that kind of pain and conflict, then why are you perpetuating it? That's what I would have to say to somebody like that, where, what is the point of this? Do you just want to keep hurting the other person? Maybe you feel like something is unfair. You've tried to work it through with your mediator or your attorney. And at a certain point, don't you want to move on with your life? You know, how is this serving you to try to punish the other person all these years later?
But they're still connected, right? I mean, isn't that what's going on? Is that they're still very much sort
Yeah.
of in a relationship with that person?
Right, that somehow they feel like they deserve justice and they keep coming back to the dry well. And by that I mean they keep thinking there's going to be water in the well this time and I'm going to get justice. But the well is dry. You're not going to get it. Why do you keep going back to the dry well? Find other places in your life where there is water and go there.
Let's talk about keeping the marriage or the relationship alive. I mean, what do people need to do to keep some of that early on excitement and connection and humor and fun? It, knowing, of course, that life is hard, marriage can be very hard as well.
Well, so many things. I think the first thing is before you say something, ask yourself, how is what I'm about to say going to land on the other person? It's such a simple thing, but often we don't think about that because we think that we would never say certain things or talk to somebody else outside the marriage in a certain way. But we think that because we have this intimacy, that it gives us license to behave however we want. And we should actually be treating the person that we're living with every day as well, if not better, than anybody else out in the world. But instead, we often take them for granted. We think, well, I can treat them however, and you know, this is they're just going to have to kind of put up with it. This is my personality, or they made me angry. And if somebody else made you angry, you would not treat them that way. You don't have license to treat the person you're with that way, just because, you know, you have this contract of marriage between you.
I mean, obviously, when a relationship is beginning, there's the excitement of the newness and the chemistry. Let's say after 20, 30, 40, maybe more years, there's familiarity, which can make you feel very secure and very attached, but nonetheless, it can be boring
Well, I think that if
or
something, if you
predictable,
feel
maybe
like
is, yeah, predictable.
Well, if you feel bored in your marriage, I would say, have you become boring? Meaning, instead of relying on your partner to entertain you, has your life become boring? Have you given up certain things? What can you do to make your life a little more interesting? Because you will probably bring that into the marriage as well. I think so often we rely on our partners for whatever we feel is lacking. So if we're feeling unhappy, we think, well, it must be because of my marriage, as opposed to there are a million things that could be contributing to why you're not feeling that sense of vitality, that sense of aliveness, that sense of connection. And you know, maybe partly it has to do with what's going on between you and your partner, but partly you have to ask yourself, what does it have to do with what else, what other areas of my life maybe I'm not feeling complete in? Or I'm not feeling connected in, or I'm not feeling excited about. And the other thing I want to just say,
Go
the
ahead.
last thing is about, and this is going to sound a little bit cheesy, but it's true, is gratitude. That we focus as humans, because in order to protect ourselves, we always had to be on alert for what was wrong. That's just how we're wired as humans. We have to look for the danger. And so we don't focus on the things that are going well so much. We take them for granted. They're there in the background, but we don't pay a lot of attention to them. And I want to urge people to pay attention to what you really enjoy about your partner. The little things. You know, does your partner ask how your day is? Do you love that your partner brings you tea? Do you love like the way your partner like gets really excited about this really nerdy hobby of theirs? You know, what are some of the things that you just really adore or delight in about your partner that because it's there all the time, you don't notice enough or pay enough attention to? And that can help you to kind of, it's like if you were focusing your camera on something, are you going to focus on the thing that you don't like to look at, or are you going to focus your camera on the things you do like to look at?
A perfect place to end our conversation, Lori Gottlieb. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Connection. Really, really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And again, she's an advice columnist for the New York Times. Her column is titled Ask the Therapist. She is co-host of two podcasts, one called Since You Asked, the other Dear Therapists. Also the author of Maybe You Should Talk to Someone and marry him, the case for settling for Mr. Good. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of The Connection. Debbie Builder produces the show. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.